Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday at 11 o'clock, with a important discussion, important topic, something we can learn from, we can grow, something we need to be able to achieve and actually improve ourselves, know what we want to do to live in a world that is safe, that is better, to be the people we want to be in the world we want to live in. And today, we are going to have a very interesting, I'm actually quite excited when I saw the title of the discussion today, and I'll tell you why. In case you missed it, we started this month with a important day, and we were celebrating the Global World Children Protection Day. It's not the Global Children's Day that is in November, but in June we start with the Global Children Protection Day. And in this day of protection children, we're going to have an extremely important and interesting discussion with top professionals in their team. So I have with me in this chat two doctors. One is well known and probably one of the leaders in South Africa regarding to abuse, any form of it, from physical, emotional, sexual, everything really, the leader and chair and head of Teddy Bear Clinic. And then I have another doctor, we'll say hi to both of them shortly, who is probably known to be one of the most strictest parenting psychologists. Can we call you old school? Or that's not nice.
Then you can call me young school.
Young school, okay, in South Africa. Let's get to know them and say good morning and thank you for joining. So firstly, I want to introduce the show and say good morning to Dr. Shada Omar, who is a director at the Teddy Bear Foundation. Dr. Omar, good morning. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning to you. Thank you to you and the listeners. Thank you.
Nice having you on the show. Every time we speak, we get a very productive discussion. So that is really, I'm really looking forward to that. And Dr. Ken Resnick, who is educational psychologist and founder of the Smart Choice Parenting Program.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
So, before we start the discussion, and just in case, there's a small chance, I don't think there is, that some of our listeners haven't heard of you. Dr. Omar, would you just introduce yourself and what you do?
Thank you, Rabbi G. So the Teddy Bear, I'm the director at the Teddy Bear Foundation, as you've introduced me. I have been at the Teddy Bear Foundation for 26 years. The Teddy Bear Foundation provides psychosocial support and medical legal support to victims of child abuse and their families. And we also work with gender-based violence, young sex offenders, children who sexually abuse other children, because more than 46% of sexual offenses committed are committed by children against other children. We running and facilitating child pregnant learner support groups within the schools across Gauteng. We are also in partnership with the Matthew Koniwe School of Leadership, where we are part of a rapid response task team when there are crises at schools. And we conduct training on an ongoing basis to across the spectrum for volunteer lay counselors, for medical legal professionals, other mental health practitioners. And we also do a lot of research. Our interventions are analyzed and we conduct research to ensure that we are relevant to what we are delivering on the ground or make amendments to the interventions. So the school outreach, the SAFE program, a lot of referrals come from those educational institutions. And of course, we provide outreach training to educators, workshopping with learners. And on an ongoing basis, we also have walk-ins, referrals that go to the medical clinic, which is based at Charlotte Motseke Hospital. And we provide court preparation for cases that have been opened criminal cases where children have to testify in court. So you can see it's a very holistic, integrated, and comprehensive approach that deals with victims of child abuse and neglect. Thank you.
Completely. Wow. That is quite a wide area of work, and very, at the same time, very specific and very goal-oriented. So thank you for that. We're going to take a short break, and then we're continuing with introducing our other second guest today. A short break, and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we just are starting a conversation, still introducing our guest. We are going to talk about, in light of this month, starting with the important day of Global Children Protection Day, with two professionals in the field of children. One is Dr. Omar, who introduced herself, who is the director of Teddy Bear Foundation. And the other one, we're going to say good morning now to, is Dr. Ken Resnick. Introduce yourself.
Good morning. Hi. I'm Dr. Ken Resnick, and I developed a parenting program called Smart Choice Parenting. It had always puzzled me that in the training of virtually all professionals, the parenting aspect is neglected. And doing research, I found virtually all evidence-based parenting programs focus on the child and helping the parent deal with their behavior. When the reality is that parents are the educators' children. They're guiding them into adulthood. Kids cannot bring them up, bring themselves up. So we need to know how to equip the child with the skills they're going to need to take on life. And unfortunately, there's so much focus on the child and so little discipline that parents are at a bit of a loss. Too many kids are in therapy. Too many kids lack social skills because we're tending to overprotect them. We're not giving them the skills to deal with the playground. They often mix too much with adults. They're very impulsive. They're quite demanding. Their social skills are not great. They don't have grit and resilience, and there's a reason for that. So we're not equipping kids socially, and that becomes a big problem, especially on the playground. And also, I think because parents are not being helped, they're often at a loss. Knowing what to do with their kids, they end up fighting, end up shouting, maybe even abusing the children. And this becomes a problem. And I do believe that what we have to do is have a look at what we're doing. Let's educate parents. Parents are the primary educators in terms of bringing up children and equipping them with the skills they need to handle their lives. And we're tending to neglect that. So that pretty much is what I do.
That's what you do. And that's maybe where also you got a bit of that reputation of being a very tough parent guider. And I want to ask you, Dr. Omar, would you say that there are certain things that if we look 50 years back, they would have been appropriate or at least acceptable parenting methods that today would be considered abuse?
Indeed, Rabbi G, you ask a very important question, because 50 years ago, the discipline that was meted out was corporal punishment, slapping, smacking, using sticks, using objects to beat a child was acceptable, was seen as the norm. It was, you know, if we look at the Holy Scripture speaking to sparing the rod and spoiling the child. And I think we've shifted. There's been an evolvement looking at promoting the best interests of the child. So 50 years. Punitive action was actually the norm to pursue controlling and managing children's behavior.
Okay. Without bringing up the legal aspect, hiding for a child today or a smack or something, is that considered abuse?
Indeed, I think, but we also need to look at it in context, because often we get this outburst and outrage from parents that, you know, one needs to look at the context of what, when, how. If a parent has tapped somebody on the back or smacked on the bottom, but it's an isolated incident, it's a once-off, it's a random incident, it's not a pattern of behavior, that should not constitute abuse. It's not acceptable. I think we must be aware of that. One cannot condone using any physical force to inflict injury or the intention is to harm the child. That has to be very clear. However, that should not construed as abuse. It can be if it's repeated, but as I say, I think the context is very important, and we encourage parents to move away from that way of conducting discipline. I think Dr. Ken Resnick is the smart person here to speak to the positive parenting, but it's about empowering, upskilling, enhancing parenting skills on dialoguing, engaging, and participating in ways of resolving problems, conflict resolution, rather than resorting to this kind of conduct. Because violence begets violence. If parents behave in this way when they are not happy with certain behaviors or uncontrollable outbursts, that is what is being imparted to a child. Children are being socialized in that way, and therefore that is not the way to go, but to invest, to stop and pause and think and then act. And that is what you're teaching your child as well. The impulse control, the restraining of impulses, and not, you know, responding on a whim and responding when the emotions are so high, where one becomes totally out of control. Thank you.
Dr. Resnick, would you agree that hitting your child is wrong?
Absolutely. I mean, it's abuse. Simple as that. And remember, the brain, 90% of their brain wiring takes place the first 5 years. Smacking, screaming, etc., impacts on that wiring and can manifest into ADHD, neurodiversity, and so on. The problem is, there's a key problem which we're missing. And I ask groups, why is it that virtually all kids are impulsive and demanding? Nobody gives me the right answer. Because they're born impulsive, demanding, self-centered. So if you'd have a little one-year-old, they'll crawl up to a parent, parent's got a pin in their hand, they'll just grab it. And we are not, what is the problem? Manners. We are not instilling manners, because manners instilled in a child slows them down. It helps them understand boundaries. They can't just go and take somebody else's toy. They can't just take something out of the fridge. They've got to learn how to control themselves. And we're missing that point.
Well, when we talk about these manners, we're way behind, because we're not only dealing with manners of getting permission from your parent before you take food or something. We're not even in a society or a time of life that we actually sit by the table and eat. We eat while we're running to the car or driving here or driving there or eating a snack on the way. So all these concepts of behaviors that are done in an order that will slow us down and allow us to control our impulsivity are not even part of society anymore. So how do we overcome that? We're going to work on your impulsivity now, because you're going to answer after the ad break. Sure. So we're just going to take a short break, and then we are going to come back to that.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, and we are already deep down in this important discussion about the balance of parenting as well with discipline, but avoiding abuse and doing it in the right way. And right before the break, Ken, you spoke about impulsivity and manners, etc. And I ask you, how does that really work practically in today's life? Because we don't live the same way. I don't know many families that actually have three meals a day. I don't know many families that even have one proper family setup dinner once a day. So we eat as we walk, as we do, in front of the TV. So we're almost wired to not deal with that impulsivity. Almost like, okay, I'm not going to add that part. I was going to ask about Dr. Omar, but I'll get back to Dr. Omar in a moment. Your thoughts. How is that practical? How is that realistic?
It's like, the world's changed. So kids go to school, they don't have to read, or they don't have to do maths. That's the same sort of logic. They're born impulsive. It is our job to guide them into life. There's got to be some sort of discipline. There's got to be some sort of structure where the kids take responsibility. So a kid is born only about themselves. So if you don't introduce manners, They don't have boundaries. They'll just take another kid's toys. They'll go to mom's handbag. There won't be anything really slowing them down. As a result, they stay self-centered, where they're only about themselves. So a lot of kids lack empathy. They don't understand how other people feel. They just want for themselves. So it's a vital part of parenting because we are the educators. And that's one of our key jobs. How do we deal with impulsivity?
Do you feel that lacking of empathy is to do with that or to do more or maybe equal to the fact that a huge percent of their social interactions and friendships is through a device? It's person to machine instead of person to person, even though there's a person on the other side.
It's all connected. Because you don't put a kid onto a little cell phone at the age of two just to keep them busy. I mean, that's been shown. They become addicted to it. They're not socialized. And if they're not being socialized, they are tending to be only about themselves. So we've got to understand how it's related to empathy is because when you start teaching manners, mom, may I have an ice cream or may I have a yogurt, please? Or don't just take another kid's toy. Mom, do you mind if I use your cell phone, please? Not just go and take it. Because it means their world is only about themselves. There's no consideration about mom. There's no thought about shame. Mom might be upset. I'm selfish. And we'll find that virtually all of these so-called mental health problems, those kids are impulsive. And I think there's a link there. And certainly from what I've observed, by slowing them down, it calms them down. You must remember that. Otherwise, they wound up. I've observed kids today cannot sit still on the couch. If they come in, they're jumping around. And I always say to the parents, I'm sure there's a lot of screaming and shouting in the house. They all agree. There is. So there's that sort of a underlying anxiety that just buzzes around. And when you've got a calm home, it's about being the authority figure in a child's life, not authoritarian, where you know how to do your job, because it's a job. Stay calm. Know how to implement discipline. If you look at good teachers aren't good because they've got a different name. There's a way of doing it. Parenting
they're good
is
also
job.
Because they come prepared, but that's another topic. Dr. Omar, I want to ask you, and what Ken said as well, is it actually a thing when we look at the numbers of abuse, and you know, we always have the statistics of what abuse comes in. Strict parents, I'm not talking about abusive parents, but strict parents that do cross lines potentially, what traumatic results are you seeing? Is it actually a thing that it's becoming real traumatic when parents are taking this very harsh approach? Not this, taking a harsh approach.
Thank you, Rabbi G. And I think what my learned colleague Ken spoke to was, I like that he used authoritative and authoritarian. And authoritative, like you talk about strict parenting, their boundaries are quite rigid. And I think the important thing to understand is that what children are exposed to, they learn by what they observe. So the social conditioning impacts on their behavior because they assimilate. So what they do, they are exposed, they internalize what they're exposed to, and then they externalize it. It's assimilated into their behavioral repertoire. And when children are confused, when there's lack of clarity, lack of communication, and of course, there's lack of consistency, the unpredictability, the instability that they're surrounded by, it results in confusion, and confusion will, of course, lend itself to trauma. So how does trauma act itself out? Because we know that often trauma sits on the foreground, on the forebrain, and they then tend to act out in their engagement, interactions with others. They're likely to then reenact what they've been subjected to themselves, whether it's verbal abuse or when they speak to people, that lack of respect and what Ken spoke to as well, the lack of empathy, not treating a person with respect or dignity or integrity, but being totally disruptive, unruly, and we find that the lack of empathy, but as I said earlier, that we find that these patterns prevail and are pervasive in their engagements with other people because that is what they've learned by their reference group, their authority figure. And I think that is important because the significant other's conduct, their behavior, their engagement with the child is actually teaching the child. And when children are traumatized, What do? They respond in a maladaptive behavior. They're trying to make sense of what has happened to them. It's an attempt to the solution of the problem. And of course, the attempt is not the appropriate and acceptable response. It becomes maladaptive, where they then respond in harming the next person, not thinking about what they've done is as incorrect because that's what they've learned. So it normalizes this whole interaction between them and other people.
Right. So let's take a little detour for a second, and I'm going to ask you to maybe give us some information. When we look at authority, generally, we need to understand that authority is someone that the child or anybody who's relying on the authority can trust that person. And when we look at the different levels of what create trusts, one of them is for you to feel that the person you're trusting actually knows about the world, knows what's good for you, knows what's not good for you, knows how to support you, and understands your world. In today's world, many kids have much stronger feeling than we had about their parents not knowing anything. Like we had a teenage time when our parents didn't know that much, but it was a phase. Yet today we have a reality of parents actually not knowing. And when I speak to parents, sometimes they'll tell me, oh, you know, my child is safe online. All they do is they play like nice, simple games. And when I ask for a name, they'll tell me, you know, roadblocks and logical games and things that are safe and that are great. And awareness is really, really, really lacking. Can you give us a crash course of a minute or two or three just for any parent joining or listening to get some insight in what is actually happening out there and what is their child facing?
So, unfortunately, the reality is that with the advent of technology, we know that it's rapidly growing and that it could be your child's best friend, because to grow, thrive, and develop and learn, I mean, the world is the oyster. So one needs to also take that into consideration, but to be aware of the risks that children are facing online. We know that children are actually engaging with people they don't know. And the reality is that your predators, online predators, are luring children, are waiting to prey on children, because we know children are our most vulnerable and marginalized population group. And your pedophiles, this is what they do. They start showing so much interest, impersonating themselves and engaging with children, where a child thinks that he or she's engaging with an age mate. They share photographs, and of course, that's all false information that they're sharing, because they think, well, I'm talking to this 15-year-old like myself, or this 15-year-old is really so supportive and caring and wanting to know about my interests, my hobbies, my family. And unfortunately, a lot of information is shared. And the reality is that with these online predators, they capitalize and monopolize and slowly start getting information, and then they break down the barrier. So they're grooming the child, and it becomes very difficult for the child. So where they, you know, give personal information, where they even provide initially photographs maybe of their face, then it goes down to the body, and then even more and more. So it becomes more intrusive and invasive. And unfortunately, the child then, when things go awry, the child is threatened, or there's intimidation there. And we find that there's threats there that if you don't do this or if you don't do that, it's going to go viral. People are going to know about it. Cases where children at school attempted suicide and committed suicide. Right. So that's cyberbullying, the sexting, sextorting. So just to alert parents that they need to actually, and I think what Ken said about smart parenting, parents need to be more savvy. They need to know who their children are engaging with online. Facebook, you know, your Snapchat, your Instagram, all of that. Unfortunately, once they post things online, you cannot remove it. And that's the harsh reality, that parents have to engage with their children, that I'm giving you this device, but it comes with a responsibility, and they need to do this on a daily basis.
Right.
There are many challenges with the use of the internet, unfortunately, but there are also many benefits. It's about monitoring and management and communication. Rabbi G, communication is key. Yeah.
So
thank you.
Let's stay on communication, and I'll ask you, Dr. Resnick, when we look at communication, and you know, Dr. Omar is speaking about predators out there. One of the big tools that we have with grooming is when a person grooming a child, a predator, or an adult and anybody, they use different methods to tell them how special they are, how amazing they are, how much they are caring and investing in them. It seems to be that in our times, in our generation, it is crucial for parents to make sure their children feel loved, cared for, special, appreciated, etc. The more a child is craving that recognition, it would appear to be that they're more vulnerable and more at risk. How do we keep that balance in your eyes between keeping a strict parenting and authority and at the same time being very invested in allowing your children to feel and making sure your children feel special, cared for, loved, supported, not needing that extra from the outside? And if I'll add one comment, especially to your daughters, I sometimes wish that fathers will understand how important their role is in their daughters' lives and how crucial it is for them to be involved and to know and to be aware and to be part and to make them feel special. Because if they won't, somebody else will. And that's a very difficult reality. So let's talk about that balance.
All right. So I think the key to parenting is knowing how to stay calm. Calm and in charge. Because from my experience now, the key with kids is how we talk to them. Because the feedback I get from parents that where it works, they all say to me, the house has calmed down. The only thing that changes is that they calm down. And how do they calm down? By always negotiating a rule with a kid, giving the kid the choice, understanding the consequence.
Talk about the story with the child with the Ritalin that he put in the teacher's cup. Right. A famous story about a child that was always getting Ritalin from the teacher. Go to the office and take Ritalin, and it worked. And then turned out he was putting it in the teacher's cup.
Yeah, you see, but just to give an example, so you negotiate a rule. Anything left lying around the house means they don't want it. Okay, if they don't want it, it's fine. Just means it's going. So you ask the child, are they happy with that rule? So in other words, if you leave your toys lying around, they're disappearing, and you might get them back in 3 weeks. You agree that's fair? Fair. So that when they choose to leave a toy lying around, all you've got to say to them, don't you want your toy? They have to shout at them. Oh, they do. What's it doing here? They don't take it to the room, it disappears, but you stay calm. So the key is, how do we make it the child's problem, but not when it's sort of punitive or anything like that? It works unbelievably well. Like a child that doesn't want to brush their teeth. Funny choice, you don't have to brush your teeth. 1-year-olds don't brush their teeth. If you want to be one, be great. It means you eat baby food for supper, you play with baby toys, you go to bed after supper, there's no TV, totally up to you. So you'd rather be one and never brush your teeth again, or rather be 6 and brush your teeth. They'll make the right choice.
So you want to tell me that you have clients that come to you and say, my 15-year-old won't brush their teeth, and you say, that's fine, just feed them baby food at night, and that works?
It actually does work. Providing you've got, once you need their respect, you need their buy-in, because respect is a mutual thing. We've got to respect our kids, and they respect us automatically. It's not the other way around. The kids have got to respect you before you respect them. So remember, we are guide. Guides know how to deal with groups. They understand what they have to do, etc. Kids come into the world believing their parents know their job. So the moment they're screaming and shouting, they become very insecure. So let's talk about the cell phone, the digital stuff. Train them from a young age, where you give them a little device. They've only got 5 minutes to play on it. A little buzzer goes, the device goes. So they learn to self-manage, and they've got to earn time on that device by finding a hobby, whether it's Lego, whether it's paint by numbers, something else to earn that device time. And we're not doing that. They're bored. How can they be bored? So we sit there with a bored kid. Why? Because they're being entertained. Right. And we must remember they're not creating, imagining things on their own and building things.
Definitely works when you train them from a young age.
Yeah.
The question is what happens when the child's older. And by the way, I just want a side comment. We're not talking about devices now, but I disagree with one thing you said. I agree with everything else. I disagree with the concept of training kids from a young age with devices. I don't train my kids from a young age with alcohol, and I don't train them from a young age with driving or dangerous stuff. I won't do that with a device.
Okay. Can I just clarify that?
Yes.
You don't give them devices. But up to the age of five, what they need to do, if they want to watch a screen, they watch a TV. Why? Because they sit up and they got to watch. If they flop down, means they don't want to watch, they go to their room. So they get used to sitting and sitting up because some of these kids have got OT problems. You don't give them a little device. What for? Or a little iPad they've got to drag around. That is just a noise. So at the end of the day, I don't believe up to four or five they can watch a TV. And obviously certain programs so that they know when something finishes, they go. If they can't sit up, flop down, they don't want to watch. So that's where the training starts. So they start learning then to have maybe 15, 20 minutes. Then put it away when they're five or six. I believe with PlayStation, kids should be able to read for PlayStation. Go and Google it. See where it's made. How many do they make? What are the dangers of PlayStation? Okay, you come and tell us what the dangers are. So do you agree you can't play it that long because it's dangerous? So we're not communicating properly with our kids. We're not letting them or hearing what they might want so that at least they feel safe, they feel heard, and that makes quite a big difference.
Dr. Omar, what's your take on what Dr. Resnick said now? And I'll tell you why I'm asking. I'm wondering if, Dr. Resnick, if you're not talking at way too young ages. And are we remembering that the people that are making the PlayStations and the people that are making the games and the people that are invested in it, they are paying the best minds to make it addictive so they can earn money? Mm. They're not volunteers. And if they wouldn't be addictive, they wouldn't make money. Mm. And I've had this on the show years ago. It was a whole big debate. So I'm wondering, when are we going to start treating devices as an addictive product? Just like you tell your child not to start alcohol till a certain age. And I'd say even more than that, my question is, and Dr. Omar, what would you think about this first, regarding when the kid says, but everybody in my class has a device, are we able to say, you're right, everyone does. However, my friend in Australia told me that the government banned legally social media to the age of 16 because it's dangerous. And my friend in this European country and in that country. So just because our country is not up to that standard doesn't mean I need to comply. Or, unfortunately, this is our reality and we have to just accept it knowing the risks. I don't know. Dr. Omar.
Okay, a very tough question, Rabbi G. Yeah. What you said before you were spitting it out, it just came to my mind, is what exactly what the children say. But everyone has the devices. And unfortunately, what we found at the Teddy Bear Clinic, what we've in our engagement with children, is that when parents say, my child is not exposed to devices, that child has been exposed to friends' devices. They've seen child sexual abuse material on their friend's smartphone or on their friend's tablet. So the reality is that we have to engage with children and speak to them on acceptable and unacceptable behavior. And I think what Dr. Ken touched on, for me, the most important thing is about the power of choice. It's not talking down to children. It's, again, throwing it back in their court. If, you know, yes, it's an addiction, because if we just look at your four-year-old, the tantrums when they do not allowed to see whatever thing on the screen and they start throwing themselves on the floor.
It's 24-year-old.
But it's because of the addiction. Unfortunately, it's and they want more and more, like any substance abuser, and people out there to make a profiteering. So the power of choice is about talking to children, the rules, the consistency in terms of structure. So children need consistency and not talking down to children, where you say to a child, and again, negotiating and creating rules together. So the norms are not developed in isolation, family norms, family rules, but in consensus with the child to say, and then the child needs to, of course, agree and be part of that, so that the child understands, if I choose this, I choose to have this. If I choose this, I choose not to have that. So it's not taking away that control from the child, giving that control to the child. The child says, I have the power of choice, and it's up, ultimately up to me, that if I decide to stray the normal code of conduct, I choose not to have that, or I choose to face the consequences. And we've worked with little children as well. It's about choices, and it works. I have to
and
say
choices
to you,
with a very young age.
At the end of the, yes, indeed. I think we need to make it very clear. But Ken spoke to that. I love the buzzing device where you're stimulating the auditory. It's not just the visual, but reminding them and sticking to that. So that is also a conditioning response. There are different ways of conditioning. But again, it's about very clarifying that the boundaries where they understand. And again, when if other parents are doing it and other people and groups and that, yes, I agree, it's happening in other homes. In our home, we have certain rules and we are going to...
And it's okay to say that. In our home, these are the rules and this is how we act regardless. Okay, we'll take a short break and then I'll comment. Just an interesting point there. A short break and we will be right back.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and right before the break, Dr. Omar, you spoke about a lot about the aspects, and also Dr. Resnick, about what would be the appropriate usage and how and to get to devices. I just want to share you one thing. One of the most special things and rewarding things that I have from doing this show is when I get feedback. And by the way, shout out to the listeners. I love the feedback. And it's fine. You stop me on Shabbos, stop me here, there. That's great. And a few years ago when we had a proper discussion on this show regarding devices, it was a month or two later, not that long, and a therapist, a well-known therapist, sent me a message. And she said that she heard the show and she went back and heard it again with her husband for the podcast, and then they've made a decision that they will have devices at home only Sundays, and they took the devices from the kids away throughout the week. Without going into the importance of it, yes, no, do you agree, do you disagree, etc., I'm not going down that route. She told me that within 4 weeks she started getting comments from neighbors, somebody who came in or people that came to her practice and said, I noticed your kids were jumping on the trampoline. What's your magic? How do you do that? How do you get them to exercise? Another parent says, I noticed your kids were sitting and doing Lego. How did you do that? I noticed your kids were just chatting in the garden. How did you do that? And she didn't. She said, all I did is I stopped devices only for Sunday and allowed them a world of opportunity. So I think it is a deeper discussion that we need to have and we need to understand and see how we work with that. At the same time, one of my kids once told me, you know, you're very quick to complain about us looking at a device during a meal or sitting in front of TV and eating. I don't know if that's a reality you've came across. But the way you guys described your breakfasts 50 years ago, you were just reading the carton of milk and the cornflakes 50 times again and again because you weren't engaging with people around you. And you were just reading the labels while you were eating instead of speaking to other people. So why are our devices so problematic?
Because they are addictive. And the problem is, the big problem, it's the only thing that seems to keep kids quiet. And parents, when they've had a heavy day, can't watch. You know, they're not even taking in the danger of it. Why? Because kids are getting bored. And we don't have proper structure. Like, for instance, if a kid's going to do activity, get a table. If they're going to build Lego, if they're going to draw, they sit up at a table. Some kids lie on the floor. They've all got sensory motor problems.
So you're saying TV is not an activity, it's a babysitter?
TV is a privilege.
Okay.
It's a privilege, and they got to earn that. And certain times only. And then they've got to switch it off and switch it. They must ask to switch on the TV. They can't just go and switch on the TV. Mom, may I please watch TV? Sure. One program, and that's it. So we just need, and kids accept that. Knowing how to stay calm, and I can tell you that is the secret.
Do kids actually acknowledge privileges today? Because so many times I've sat with teenagers and kids and told them about how privileged they are, and they looked at me like I'm crazy.
All right. Well, I tell kids, the only thing parents have to do is educate them, clothe and feed them. All the rest are privileges. So nobody does it ever say that all kids of four must have a PlayStation. You've got to earn the right, because it is bad for you. There's no question that they can go and read up about. So you've got to earn that by either getting involved in some other extramural activity, get a hobby, keep yourself busy. Kids are bored, they can watch the paint dry. They'll think of something to do after 10 minutes. We don't do that. We've got to go there and we've got to entertain them. So we've got to get kids used to that impulsivity. They've got to be entertained. They've got nothing to do. Wow. So there, again, it just shows that parents are not being educated.
But this privilege is way before. Meaning, I remember growing up that on your birthday, you were able to ask what you want mom to cook for dinner. I meet parents today that every day their children tell them this and that, and sometimes they'll make three separate dinners for every child.
But they're doing it wrong. That's what I'm saying. Nobody's educating the parents. Please remember, parents don't understand that they are educators. There's got to be respect, like with any educator. The kids have got to have discipline. There's got to be routine. All of these structures make kids feel safe. If it's like a circus, they're going to be overacting in a circus.
Dr. Amar, are we doing it all wrong?
So I want to speak to what I think is also something so important as parents. We mustn't forget the affirmations, the positive affirmations, because if we want to see an improvement, we want to see a reduction in unacceptable behavior, we need to use positive reinforcement. Yes, you dangle the tokens, the social reinforcers, but for every effort, it's not just praising the child, it's prizing the child. So the child doesn't have to get 10 out of 10, but if they've lifted their plate, if they've given a smile, if they've opened the door for you, any little gesture, make a big deal about it, because that's promoting positive behavior. That's incentivizing the child and recognizing the validation, which often is not recognized. And children are in seek of approval, in seek of affection. And we need to do more of that if we want to see a change in their behavior. But I also agree with Ken about the issue of, TV, screen time, all of that. It's not a right. It's a privilege. They've got to earn it. So assign tasks, assign chores. And I like the idea, Rabbi G, where you share that example, beautiful example, where a specific day and time was allocated to the use of devices. So how can children be exposed to that? It's this kind of rules that are enforced, and at the same time, they actually realize and learn that there are other fun methods as well that release the endorphins, the happy hormones, the serotonin. And something that we often forget to do is hugging and stroking and patting on the shoulder, rubbing the head, the oxytocin, the stress hormone. I mean, we know that children are faced with a lot of stress. The cortisol levels are sky high. And how do we reduce that? By actually, that physical contact, physical connection, and the love hormone, the oxytocin of the hugs, and that so that children learn and appreciate that they are being valued. And likewise, we are teaching them empathy, and that's how we're teaching them to reciprocate as well.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, we need to take a break. But Dr. Amar, as always, you dropped the bomb that we'll have to discuss in depth, because so many adults are scared to show a physical affection to the kids and to support their kids in that way. And it's a very difficult place to deal with that. A short break, and we're coming towards the end of the hour.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, and we really are finishing today's topic. It was fascinating. I really highly recommend you go to the podcast and listen to it. Before we end, the same question for a decade I've been asking at the end of this show, and I'll ask you both, and we have literally 30 seconds for each, as we did come to the end. Dr. Amar, what do you wish and hope we know or we do different for a better future for our society?
Well, the most important thing is I would wish for more dialogue, to talk to children. I think often it's easy to like we mentioned, the surrogate caregiver being screen stations and TV. It's actually parent stopping, pausing, and actually maintaining eye contact and talking to their children. So my one word is communication and connection.
Communication, connection. Please, God, that's really something we thrive and we need, and we will get that as a better future. Dr. Resnick.
I think parents need to understand we are the educators. We have to equip them with skills from right from the beginning. So a little three-year-old can sit alone and keep themselves busy and learn how to persevere. They can have boundaries, but they've got to say please and thank you. They've got to have respect in terms of just what they're doing. Considering others have routine, very important. Understand how important our role is. We can show them little words like McDonald's when they're traveling. And then there's so many things we could do as parents. We're actually educating them, making them aware. But we wait till they go to pre-primary school. Right. And by then, they're sort of out of control.
So we wish parents will understand their importance and their role and
exactly.
From day one.
They're educators, and they're the authority figure in their child's life.
Yeah. You know, I was working with the London Social Services, and when they have when somebody's under supervision, they actually start monitoring the safety of the child from beginning of pregnancy, literally asking, what is the mom eating? How is she resting? How is things doing? And really, it's a responsibility from day one. It's incredible.
Can I make one?
Quick, we have like 5 seconds.
I had a situation with a mom that I just trained, and she learned. Her kid woke up, didn't feel like going to school. She said he had a sore stomach, and she thought, did the program. She said, I tell you, my boy, it's fine, but you just got to ask your teacher. If she says that you can come home, I'll bring you home. He went to school.
Not an argument. And that's it.
So it's all staying calm, nobody banging heads. There's just a way of doing it, and it works very well.
And taking that ownership.
Yeah.
Dr. Ken Resnick, educational psychologist and founder of Smart Choice Parenting Program. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Very insightful, as always.
Thanks.
Dr. Shahada Omar, director at Teddy Bear Foundation. And I'm leaving it at that because if I would start specifying all the things you do, we'll take away in the next show. I don't have time. People could check online. But Dr. Shahada Omar, director of Teddy Bear Foundation, thank you so much for being with us today. As usual, very insightful, very helpful, very appreciated. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly. Thank you, Senna, for putting these interviews in place. And thank you to our listeners that are with us week after week, where we can communicate, discuss, learn, and grow, and just be the people we want to be in the world we want to be in. Stay safe. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, enjoy so many more great programs here on Chai FM.